This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Resource Center. My name is Audrey Raj. It is the first Tuesday of March, and you know how we kick off every new month on Resource Center. We do our monthly check-in on all things related to psychology at work with organizational psychologist and CEO of OPSYC, Hetal Doshi. It's March, Hetal.
Yeah, super fast, isn't it, Audrey?
We're going to be talking about psychological safety today. And, you know, while it seems like a straightforward response to many of us, you know, when someone asks us, you know, do you feel safe at work? There's a lot more to psychological safety at the workplace to consider, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just sounds like a very simple word, but actually the implementation and the experience of it is something quite remarkable, something that I feel that, you know, by the time we die and we look back in our lives, we'd probably be super grateful to have worked in psychologically safe teams or have had psychologically safe relationships or communities. And that would be probably the best experiences that we've ever had in our lives. So I think it's a really worthwhile topic, something worthwhile not only for work, but also for an entire life experience.
All right. Before we go any further, maybe you can define what psychological safety is for us, so we know exactly what we're discussing today.
Okay, sure. So there's a bit of a historical shift in the definition. Yeah. So if I could just take a moment here. Yeah. In 1965, psychological safety was defined as the extent to which individuals feel secure and confident in their ability to manage change. So psychological safety was an experience that was related to change. Whenever change happens, I feel safe. In 1990, it became something that had nothing to do with change, but more of that feeling of being able to show an employee yourself without any fear of negative consequences on a day-to-day basis. So regardless of change, I just feel like whenever I express myself, there is a minimal fear or experience of fear of negative consequences to my self-image, to my status, or my career. So I guess this also is a bit telling about the times that we had in 1965, where probably change was really exponential, and that experience was more significant. But as we go into 1990, self-image, our status becomes a bit more important. But in later on, in 1999, Anne Edmondson, who's really a pioneer in psychological safety, she talks about a shared belief that the team is safe for interpersonal risk-taking in their work environment. So this goes from like, okay, this is about change and a threat in my life to an importance in my self-image or status to now it is an environment that we create in teams that makes us feel like we can speak up and may allow others to feel that they could speak up as well. So it's interesting because then 1999 or the 2000s represents an era where communities begin to become a very important experience that majority of people want to create the right experience for as well.
Right. Yeah. Is it worth discussing what isn't psychological safety? You know, what it doesn't encompass?
Yeah, I think it's really important because whenever we have sessions and we put in ground rules for psychological safety, many people confuse that with the notion that they can say anything without any fear of any consequences. Mm. So we remind them that it is a shared belief for everyone to create the experience so that they can begin to have that ability to take risk in a team. So if you are someone who feels like, okay, a psychological safety means I can say anything that I want to say without any fear of consequence, but when you say what you say causes fear in other people and limits their experience of speaking up, then that's obviously not psychological safety, because the outcome of psychological safety means that not only you feel that you can speak up, but also what you have said allows other people to feel that they can speak up. So it really has this really high level of consciousness, not only about what you're saying, but also the kind of experience that you have when other people have their piece to be said as well.
Okay, so coming back to the workplace, you know, why is psychological safety important in the workplace? You know, why is it important to create or to build or to strengthen this safety aspect in the workplace?
I think, you know, there was a study done in 2012 in Google, and it was called Project Aristotle. In this particular project, they were looking at what made the teams the best teams. So they were looking at most effective teams in Google's, and they're wondering, what actually created that level of experience for them to be the most effective teams? So was it like, you know, these people were made up of similar interests? Was it that they were all motivated by the same rewards? Was it that they all socialized the same way outside of office? Did they have the same hobbies? Were their educational backgrounds similar? What was it that made them the most effective teams? And they realized that they actually couldn't find any patterns when it came to like how to group people together. So the groupings had no real strong patterns, but rather what they found out was the group norms. So it wasn't who they were that mattered, but the kind of norms that they had that made a big difference, and that were the unwritten rules about how they would function when they get together. And so, you know, they had this very clear understanding after they came to conclusion about these group norms, that group norms that included psychological safety, meaning that everybody is an equal and everybody deserves the right to speak up and everybody deserves to create that environment that allows other people to speak up, was the most important criteria for unwritten rules in most effective teams. So it wasn't that effective teams were smarter, better in any way. It was just that they had a lot more psychological safety. Of course, there were other factors as well, but psychological safety came up as the most important. And so when you ask why it is important, obviously, you know, they say teamwork makes the dream work and, you know, 1 + 1 should be 100. So if you really want to understand what gives the power, the psychosocial power in a team, then yeah, then definitely you want to understand the core ingredient of it. And that would be feeling safe, feeling that you are valued and that your opinions matter and that it is equally an experience that you create for other people in the team as well.
Are there like levels or stages? I mean, I'm just thinking if there are varying levels of psychological safety. Like, I feel a little safe. I feel very safe to speak up and say whatever I like. I mean, like, are there levels to this or stages to it?
Yeah. What was really interesting by this particular researcher, Dr. Clark, was that he actually found that there were 4 levels or 4 stages of psychological safety, and you can progress from stage 1 to 4. And it's more a linear model applied to like a non-linear phenomena. So you can kind of like go back and forth a little bit, but you kind of need to have one to get to the next one. So right. I'm just going to share what this might look like. Yeah. Inclusion safety would be one of them. So imagine if you're getting into a team, you're joining a company for the first time, or you're joining a team for the first time. And there is this experience where you feel you're included, that you are comfortable, you know, being present in everybody's, you know, in everybody's presence, and that you're wanted and that you're appreciated. So we call that inclusion safety. When you feel like you belong, your defenses actually come down a little bit and you begin to allow yourself to increase that level of curiosity in engagement or in certain experiences or in certain types of work that other people are doing. So the second part is called learner safety, where you feel comfortable enough to ask questions. So there's a particular client of mine saying, and I think that's a lot of us would have had this experience where you hear someone talking and you're like, I don't understand a word that you're talking about. And I've got so many questions in my mind, but I don't say anything. So what is the point of having these team meetings when at the back of your mind, you have no clue what's going on, but you can't even... then because you don't feel included enough, then therefore you cannot ask questions. So learner safety would be the next one. And so from learner safety, the ability to like experiment with questions and stuff like that, then goes on to contributor safety, which is the ability to contribute an idea to the person that you were maybe curious about or question that you're curious about, without being fearful of embarrassment or ridicule. So sometimes, for example, you know, your bosses could be saying something, or somebody with higher status, stature, power could be saying something and you disagree with it, but you actually have something to contribute to. And because maybe you don't have that level of expertise, but you maybe have some level of understanding, you do not offer an opinion or an angle because you actually fear being embarrassed or ridiculed from that, from the other person. So being shut down, for example. And the last part would be then that if you actually feel that you have contributor safety, meaning that you can contribute to it, then taking the next step further to saying, I'm going to start to challenge somebody with higher levels of authority, high levels of power, high levels of tenure, high levels of age, so on and so forth, without feeling that it could impact your career, your reputation, your status and potential relationships going forward as well. So inclusion, safety to learner safety, contributor safety, and then challenger safety. So the best thing that, I mean, one way of looking at a team that is really highly functioning and that has very high levels of psychological safety is when you can see them openly challenging each other and at the same time having a good laugh and the other actually saying that's an interesting idea. Thank you for sharing. That would be the hallmark. So I'm wondering whether like anyone who's listening right now, like, you know, in a recent team meeting that you were in, to what extent that, you know, there were thoughts in your head that you're able to not only say it, but also contribute your ideas and then also challenge it. And whether, I guess the ultimate thing would be, is it even worthwhile doing that? Because it takes a lot of effort. And so when you've had bad experiences over a period of time, you're like, okay, what's the point? You know, I just recently, like literally half an hour before getting into this call with you, I heard someone who had repeatedly shared ideas, evidence-based, fact-based ideas to their management. And it was shut down many times. And if they listened to this person, I guess they would have probably monetized and commercialized a lot more. And this person actually said, you know what? I'm done actually contributing my ideas. I'm just going to take myself as a salaried staff from now. This is what I'm paid. I'm just going to get my job done. And that's about it. So I guess that could be an experience that, you know, according to research, about 49% of people would feel that way. I forget about it. Let me just take my salary and move on with my life.
Wow, 49%. So that is definitely going to impact the company's bottom line. If everyone chooses to just take a back seat and, you know, not contribute just because they feel unsafe to share.
Yeah. Right? And here's another really interesting study in like 1989. I know it's a long time ago, but I really hope that people who listen to research that was done in 1980s or 1990s, you actually understand that there's a lot of value in listening to it as well. Yeah? So there was a researcher called Yoshida in 1989. This researcher found that even though 100% of frontline problems, so say, for example, your frontline, all of your problems were known to other frontliners, but only 74% were known to the team leaders, 9% to middle management, and only 4% to top management. So by the time, so basically CEOs who are listening, you probably only understand 4% of the major challenges and issues that are happening on the ground. And if you don't know that, right, like if you don't know that, you probably are missing out on some of the core innovative solutions that could create radical improvements in productivity and efficiency in your workplace. But you only are aware of 4% of it. So that's pretty crazy, right?
Yes, it is. All right, we're going to need to take a quick break for some messages. But when we come back, we discuss how to increase psychological safety in your organization. All that and more happening on Resource Center. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Be free, Malaysians. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You are listening to Resource Center. This is Audrey Raj, organizational psychologist and CEO of OSIC. Hetal Doshi is online with me right now. It's episode 10 of our Psychology at Work series. And on this episode, we're discussing psychological safety at work. Now, Hetal, I know we're going a bit off tangent here, or maybe we're not, but I wanted to know what psychological safety looks like in a hybrid work environment. You know, we've all been kind of doing some remote work, not really in the same office space as our teammates and all that. Does that affect psychological safety? Because I can imagine it would. You know, you have more people taking that backseat like we were discussing before the break, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that well, from my personal experience and also from the sessions that we conduct, right, you could take years to build a relationship and feel safe in a relationship. Or if you use the right techniques, you could probably have it almost instantaneously. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's about where we are located and how we are functioning these days. I think it's techniques to be able to create the norms, the right norms before you enter a deeper conversation. So taking like just about 30 seconds to a minute to warm up and create the right conditions for a nice, challenging conversation would be probably the most important thing. So I think keeping about 30 seconds to a minute probably can allow you to go significantly deeper. But obviously, there are personality and individual differences as well, right? Some people are a bit slower to open up. Some people are a bit more open to opening up. However, conditioning really, really helps, and setting up norms really helps. So again, inclusion, safety, very important. So come up with like interesting ways to make a person feel safe straight away and belong and appreciate the person straight away. So saying something like, hey, you know, really appreciate you taking the call. You know, there were some things that I noticed about you now in the history of a relationship that, you know, or some things that I've heard about you from other people that, you know, makes me really look forward to having this relationship with you. And what I'm really looking forward to in this conversation is for us to ask each other questions, number one. Number two, please share your opinions with me because I might be wrong in some of my opinions. And please let's challenge ourselves so that we can utilize our both of our resources to achieve this goal in a much higher capacity. And please know that I will not get offended along the way as well. And I apologize in advance if I do. So maybe something like that in 30 seconds to a minute. And obviously proving, not only just saying it in words, but proving it through your actions. Not after the call, you're like, oh, you know, how dare that person said this and that and the other. Yeah, so proving through a follow-up email saying, you know, I really appreciate it. And ultimately rewarding and recognizing learner, contributor, and challenger safety behaviors as well.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. So don't skip the icebreaker.
Exactly.
I want to ask about the goal of psychological safety. I'm not sure if we've covered this already, but is there a goal to, you know, trying to create psychological safety in your organization?
Yeah, I think like, you know, when you look at the levels of accountability in an organization, right? You know, I think a lot of CEOs would ask this question of how can I make my people care enough and be completely accountable and responsible for the work that they do? I think it all depends on the level of psychological safety. So, for example, right, if there's very low levels of psychological safety in an organization, a person could end up being very apathetic, like, okay, now what's the point? Apathy. Like, apathy is something that is like the worst. That is like the anti-goal of psychological safety. It's like, you know, the lowest, the last thing that you want is that a person, because they feel so unsafe in an organization, they end up saying, what's the point? And I don't care. The next thing would be the anxiety zone. So the anxiety zone would be like, oh my God, I'm so scared to speak up all the time. And, you know, going to work or being in the company of these people makes me super stressed out. And I have seen so many people like that, like super scared of the next presentation with their boards or their management or proposing an idea and having that level of anxiety to even speak up, right? And then you have something called the comfort zone. So you're comfortable, but you're not challenged. So that would be the third, you know, the third highest goal that you could achieve. Having a comfort zone. So I'm very comfortable. I'm able to speak up, blah, blah, blah. I think the ultimate goal of psychological safety, the highest order of it would be the, you know, exponential learning zone, where in every conversation, the level of safety is super high that everybody is geared up to contribute and to challenge and to raise the standard of learning, raise the standard of resourcefulness within that particular conversation. Where you walk out from that conversation, having learned something that you didn't before, you discover things that you didn't do before, and you probably have the energy to want to do something different that you did before as well. And every conversation actually makes a difference. So those of you who have like, you know, back-to-back-to-back-to-back meetings, you can actually get energized after a conversation because you're actually learning something and you know, the people's energy in the room gives you gets transferred to you and you kind of want to build more. I think that's the goal of it, exponential learning, but also being completely energized after a conversation.
So is there a way we can measure psychological safety, or we can tell, you know, what stage you're at, you know, or who is aiming for which goal? You know, I mean, sure. Like, is there a way to measure this?
Yeah. So Anne Edmondson would be one of our pioneers in psychological safety from a modernistic perspective. Yeah. So she's like, you know, someone that we appreciate in this modern world from a psychological safety level of expertise. So she's created a 7-item psychological safety scale. So it's just 7 items, and you could even contact us if you would like to, you know, have access to that tool, but otherwise you can just go online and check on it. The 7 questions, if I can maybe just share very quickly, 3 of them. One of them would be, if I make a mistake in this team, it is held against me. I like both of us saying no at the same time.
Okay. All right. So that would be like
That would be one of it. And then you would rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 7. And then likewise, you've got six more items. Another one would be members of this team are able to bring up problems and tough issues. So what I really like about this one was that when we were working with a particular team, we had a very tough love leader. And a lot of people used to make a lot of remarks about the tough loveness of that particular leader. But at the same time, the leader was able to create the right conditions for people to bring up problems and tough issues. So even though it was tough love, but this person was always very encouraging of people bringing up problems and issues. Here's another third one. I think this is really incredible because people don't often take this as a sign of psychological safety. That people find it difficult to ask other members of this team for help. So I think it is... In another way or form, it is about feeling encouraged all the time to ask for help. That you feel internally encouraged that I can and I should ask for help regularly. On the contrary, then it is difficult to ask for members of this team for help. And yeah, there are a few others, but definitely go check it out. And yeah, you can try this out with your teams.
Can we just go through very quickly what the others
are? Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. The others are, it is safe to take a risk in this team. People in this team sometimes reject others for being different.
Mm.
Working with members of this team, my unique skills and talents are valued and utilized. No one on this team would deliberately act in a way that undermines my efforts.
Okay. So, Hetal, you know, just to wrap up, what can we do to increase psychological safety in the workplace? Are there steps to create, to build, to help up the psychological safety levels in your organization?
Yeah, I think, you know, from a leadership perspective, yeah. Well, from an organizational perspective, number one, engage in supportive organizational practices. So anything that promotes being supportive should be something that is rewarded and recognized. So do check your KPIs in leaders. What is the number one KPI over there? Is it to create the right environment or is it only to drive performance? Again, if you are all set up to create the right environment, then you're creating the right conditions for teams to thrive. The second thing would be to create a lot of alternative routes for speaking up because majority of the challenges that leaders have been telling me about in the past few months is that when they get on MS Teams, people are not on their videos, or when they ask questions, people are not speaking up. So please find alternative routes to speaking up. Like, for example, hey guys, let's all take a minute and please everybody put in your opinions within the next minute. I'm putting a timer and I'd like every single one of you to put in your opinions at the end of 1 minute. And then from that perspective, you can pick up like a couple of people to elaborate a little bit further on what they were trying to say and thank them. Remember to thank them. And then after that, begin the process of saying, all right, now we're going to move into challenging each other. Shall we now also challenge each other and so on and so forth? Also, I think it is very important to prove that this actually leads to better outcomes. And what that means is really to create case studies and success stories from creating these environments. So, for example, in 10 teams that we were working with last year, when we embarked on creating not only psychological safety, but also reducing psychological risk, which is a different topic altogether, what we did was we asked everybody to reflect in the past 1 month what their successes were and how having a safe environment actually led to the success or how having a risky environment decreased their level of success. And what they did was when they built up these case studies, it became a very, very clear reason why psychological safety was important. So keeping your eye on the prize and knowing that these practices actually contribute to greater outcomes, yeah, actually really, really helps as well. So in summary, number one, having practices that are valued as a priority and rewarding and recognizing this. Number two would be to create alternative paths. And number three would be to actually provide results or outcomes in the form of case studies that the entire organization can learn from as well. So I guess these three would be the most valuable. There are many other ways, but yeah, I would definitely recommend these three.
Hetal, for listeners tuning in right now who would like a recap on all that you've just discussed with us, is there somewhere they can go to look at, you know, the measurement tools, those questions that you put to us earlier on how to measure psychological safety? Or, you know, is there a good resource online where they can learn more about psychological safety at the workplace?
I think if you just Google Anne Edmondson, you probably will find a lot of good things that, a lot of good work that she has done. And also, please feel free to get in touch with us because we have all kinds of resources around psychological safety. And we've got an app as well where individuals can immediately do their assessments and get their results straight away. And obviously, you can collate this for your teams as well. So, yeah.
And how do they get in touch with you, Hetal?
It would be Hetal, H-E-T-A-L, at o-psych.com. Or feel free to get in touch with me directly on LinkedIn, where I think majority of you have been, just getting in touch with me on LinkedIn. It's been phenomenal to hear the kind of experiences and the requests that you have from your management as well. So looking forward to hearing from you on LinkedIn after this.
And if you missed out on any part of this show, you can go look for the podcast on our website. That's bfm.my. You can also find all our podcasts on the BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play, including all the episodes that we have done with Hetal on psychology at the workplace. And yeah, I guess that's a wrap for us. I've been speaking with Hetal Doshi, organizational psychologist and CEO of OPsych. My name is Audrey Raj. And until next week, this has been Resource Center on Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.